This episode is brought to you by Harmony. Please stay tuned for more information about them later in the episode. What's up, everybody? I'm Scott Melker, and this is the Wolf of All Streets podcast, where twice a week I talk to your favorite personalities from the worlds of Bitcoin, finance, trading, art, music, sports, and politics, basically anyone with a good story to tell. Now, if you've been around the crypto space for a little while, you've probably noticed that crypto is finally finding its way into the mainstream. One of the defining factors of 2021 has been the marriage of crypto and sports, which happen to be two of my favorite things. We have seen football players, fighters, basketball players, entire leagues, and today's special guest, a NASCAR driver, all dive headfirst into the space with their own unique reasons as to why they chose to get involved in crypto and accept sponsorships from crypto companies. Landon Castle is no exception to this rule, as he has his own unique story that culminated in an epic sponsorship with Voyager on his car. Landon, I can't wait to hear your story and learn more about how crypto is interacting with professional sports. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Scott, for having me. Like I told you, I feel unworthy of some of the guests that you've had on here. It's amazing. You have a great show. You get some great insight into the crypto world. So I'm just happy to be here.
Thank you. That's very flattering for them, but I think that you definitely definitely are at the top of your game and deserve to be here for
sure. Thank you.
So I'm curious. I'm very curious. What does it feel like to have this new crypto fan base? You know, obviously, like, you've had the fans of your sport and your fans, but all of a sudden you've opened this whole new Pandora's box, seemingly.
Yeah, it is. It is very interesting. I've been active on crypto Twitter for a while, but I haven't seeked it out necessarily. You know, I've used hashtags here and there. Bitcoin's been in my bio. But, like I said, I don't know if I've seeked it out. And so I've had plenty of crypto followers. And then a lot of my fan base also is involved in crypto. So I've seen a lot of feedback, and I even get people at the racetrack that'll make comments. So I haven't been silent about it for many years, but this is the first real crossover for me between, you know, a personal interest, or even you could say personal investment, right? Because it's been part of my personal portfolio for a number of years, to my professional side of things. And it has been interesting. The crypto community is passionate, it's powerful, and you know, it's very driven, which makes sense. I mean, you know, people are dealing with their livelihoods, whether it's play money or a major part of their portfolios. There's a lot of emotion tied in when you're talking about people's money. So I've enjoyed the feedback that I've gotten. And really, that's a lot of the motivation behind why Voyager wants to be involved and wants to tap into my community and the crypto community, because it is very community driven.
Yeah, it is a very passionate community. We just need to always make sure that we focus that passion positively, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's an uncontrollable beast, though. You know, social media has its quirks to it, and you know, there's definitely a case study to be made about the positivity and negativity and the reactions to it, the engagement rates on social media. That's totally unrelated to crypto. That's just people in general, I suppose.
I was going to say, is it much different in sports, or is it just, you know, sort of the way
it is? I think
it's
all the same, you know, whether you're sports, celebrity, business, you know, I think that people, the way that people interact on social media is, there's an interesting human element to it. I feel like I have a pretty big following and have, for a long time, but I'm not, you know, I've been fortunate enough that I don't have a lot of haters. And I don't know if it's because I'm not, you know, Kim Kardashian level or something like that, where there's just, you know, hundreds of millions of people and you're bound to have 10 million that hate you or something like that. I haven't gotten tons of hate on social media. And when I do get negativity, it's usually a snarky comment here or there. And a lot of times you can diffuse it just by responding.
It just breaks shoot right back.
I'm a child. I call myself a child of the internet, as we, most of us are. I'm very well aware of the rules of the internet. And obviously one of those rules is don't feed the trolls. but I can tell you for a lot of them, you know, sometimes I'll get some negativity or criticism from someone that's a race fan. And all it takes is just a little response. And next thing you know, they're like, oh, no, I was just pointing this out. And good luck.
Yep, your buddies now. Yeah, biggest fan.
And so, you know, a well thought out rebuttal to criticism can actually turn into, you know, a fan or something like that. I think that's maybe difficult to do at scale, but
yes, but it does work. Yeah, in limited cases, when you use the proper judgment on who to respond to and which trolls definitely not to feed. So I'm curious, you said that you have Bitcoin in your bio and your profile. Now you have laser eyes, right? So obviously you're a part of the community in that regard. But when did your Bitcoin journey start, so to speak? When did you start to get interested? Because clearly it had nothing to do with your professional career. Right. As you said, it was something you found on your own.
Right. Well, so it was a little bit to do with NASCAR, because and like a lot of people, you know, I could say that my Bitcoin journey started before I bought Bitcoin, because you know, I heard about it many years ago. I mean, I was a 16-17 year old kid in 2009-2010, trolling forums and you know, be just part of the internet, and so I had heard of Bitcoin, known what it was. My brother, I know, was using Bitcoin for who knows what it was he was using it for. And
charity. Lots of charitable giving.
That's right. But it, you know, I don't think I really, I can definitely say, you know, up to 2013-14, to me, was still a magic internet money type thing. And I talk about, I haven't talked a lot about, but I as I think about maybe my aha moments for Bitcoin, was I was at a conference in, let's say, 2013, and the speaker was talking about culture and kind of looking into the future, and referred back to the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, and the banks, and talked about how future generations could potentially reject the idea of the banking institutions as we know it, because they watched their families go through turmoil, lose their homes, and the speakers sort of broadly predicted, you know, that the future generations would may question the financial institutions of the future. And so that kind of stuck with me. And then it wasn't long after that, a friend of mine, Josh Wise, for some viral nature, got crowdfunded sponsorship through the Dogecoin community. And they didn't pay in Dogecoin. They raised the money themselves. The community raised the money themselves through Dogecoin, found a way to liquidate it, and paid the race team in US dollars. But that was like, the kind of connecting of all of those things was like, okay, this isn't just magic internet money. There's something more here. And from that point on is where I really started to understand, really tried to understand it. And then, you know, I'm kind of a learn by doing type of person. So my actual involvement in crypto and in Bitcoin was not just buying it, but I mined it as well. So at one point I had a small mining farm, and I mined multiple coins, not just Bitcoin, for a little over 2 years.
And what was that experience like? Did you find it to be profitable? Was the timing right? I mean, mining, like anything else, obviously it's another way of stacking sats, but certainly helps when the market goes up after you've been mining.
Yeah, so what I did, with mining was, I still hold every coin that I mined. And awesome. And so ultimately, you can say it was profitable, but like, what's, you know, I didn't really realize those profits. It's not like I was cash flowing my mining operation, right? I was, you know,
right.
The way I look at it is, I was buying Bitcoin at a discount for those years that I was mining, right? So, you know, I had a capital investment in the machines, But ultimately, if you amortize that over the 2 years that I mined, and look at my cost of mining over the course of 2 years, even with the fluctuations in the market, I mean, I was mining Bitcoin when it was worth $2,500, and I was mining it when it was worth $20,000, right? So right. There were days that it was insanely, quote unquote, profitable, and there were days that it was maybe not profitable. But at the end of the day, I was just buying at a discount because I still hold on to all the coins. And, you know, I think that the mining business, one thing I took away from the mining business was a comparison to auto racing, because I felt like to keep up with the rest of the mining industry, I had to constantly find ways to improve my operation. And that's through, you know, better equipment, better power, better efficiency to get more out of your mining rigs. Where in racing, you know, you're constantly trying to improve your race cars. You're iterating on the equipment you have. You're buying new equipment when it's available, and you need a better power plant under the hood to drive your car. So, you know, I think if I were to re-enter the mining space, I feel like I would do it from the power production side of things. I would love to invest in a power plant someday, you know, whether it's a small one in the mountains or a, you know, a big venture project with lots of money. It would be cool to be in the power production industry and have crypto mining as part of that business.
So I saw that you had like a pretty fun spat with the SHIB community. Obviously you were pretty passionate. You knew about Doge in 2014, which right. I mean, that's the really early days. I started trading those Doge cycles in 16, right?
Yeah.
15 sats, 180 sats, 20 sats, 150 sats. It's, right. It's amazing to see what it's come. So clearly you're not just into Bitcoin. So tell me about what else you're interested in, or at least trading and having fun with now.
Yeah. So I, you know, generally speaking, I am a buy and hold person, and I my personal financials, I'm fairly conservative. My business, you know, racing is a great business. It's provided an awesome living for me and my family for a number of years. I've done it professionally for about 15 years now. But it can be volatile, and so, you know, having cash on hand for when you're unemployed is important to me. You know, keeping debt to a minimum is important to me. And then that's what's sort of afforded me to make my crypto investments. But even in my crypto investments, so, you know, a small percentage of that is allocated towards trading and speculating on smaller cap tokens. So, you know, the SHIB community was one that embraced me very organically. And with a lot of energy, and it happened at the same time that we announced our Voyager sponsorship. Voyager added Shiba Inu to their platform, and this was all, I don't want to say unplanned, but it just kind of happened at the same time, and the community started reaching out to me on social media and was just like, you know, created either saw synergies or created synergies or whatever you want to say. And so I just started responding back to them and started looking into the project. And, you know, you can look through my timeline. I'm not, telling anybody to buy any tokens and
ever,
you know, I'm not giving any financial advice, but I can tell you that I, being in the marketing business in racing, engaging with energetic communities and rallying around communities is a great part of what I do, and so I really admire and love what that community is doing. And I could tell you, within 5 days of being involved on Twitter with the Shiba Inu community, I'm now in Telegram groups, I'm in Instagram groups, and I've got all these chat messages, and people are sending me all kinds of artwork and creatives and really cool stuff. So I would love to do more with Shiba. I would love to do more with the VGX community, the Voyager token, because that's a great community in itself. You know, all these people that are so heavily invested in these tokens, obviously they stand a financial risk and potential gain with these projects, but they're also using the power of their communities and their friend groups, even if they're virtual friend groups, to create something. And so all these projects, you know, do have something to offer. And I think that's pretty compelling.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. At the very least. That's a great point. It is amazing how passionate the communities are around each of these coins, especially when the market is looking good.
Yeah, it is. I think that, like, I think at one point in my crypto journey, I would have called myself a Bitcoin maximalist. And you know, I can definitely see, I'm not afraid to admit that or say that, but I think that now I look back on that and I say, you know, and I do wonder, I look at all these powerful communities, I look at what they're accomplishing, at least for themselves and for the projects that they're invested in, and the technology they're trying to build. And I think, you know, there's something there, you know, there's something to some of these other things, but crypto is an interesting space, and you do have to protect yourself. You do have to do your own research. You do have to think independently, because you never know what's out there. But I think the funny thing is that's sort of the point, right? That's the point of crypto, right? is this financial individual liberty, right? It's a very free market, and I like that. That's why we got in. That's why a lot of people get involved in the first place. But with that comes great responsibility, right?
Of course. So I'm curious. I mean, obviously, you don't speak for every athlete in the world, but being that you're, you know, a NASCAR driver, have you seen, since you've been in crypto so early, an evolution in at least awareness or interest in the space among other drivers, among the teams, you know, even anecdotally among other athletes in other sports?
Yeah, I mean, I have, and it's, I would love to, I think over the next 6 months to a year, I'll learn the even deeper meaning to it all among my peers. You know, obviously at a surface level, there's a lot of race car drivers that have approached me. And even before the sponsorship, a lot of people that I see on a weekly basis know that I'm invested in crypto, right? They know that I was mining crypto because I had a mining farm. And so there are people, you know, I'm kind of like that guy that every time Bitcoin does something, right, whether it's plus 20% or minus 20%, I usually wake up to a handful of text messages that are like, how's your Bitcoin doing? and the fun answer to that is always like, it's worked the same to me as it was yesterday, right?
One Bitcoin is one Bitcoin.
Yeah. Right, one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. But, you know, my peers are, I think in a similar way that the mainstream retail market is experiencing it. My peers, you know, reach out to me with a lot of the same questions, right? They say they're dabbling things. They want to know if they should buy some other coins because Bitcoin is so expensive. You know, that's at a base level. But there's a lot of people, especially since the Voyager partnership, that have come out of the woodwork that have shared with me their crypto journeys and just haven't had anybody to talk to about it within the industry. And a lot of those people are engineers on race teams and really, you know, smart people that have said, hey, you know, I was as cool that you were mining. I didn't know that you mined crypto. I've been mining Ethereum with a bunch of old graphics cards for, you know, a couple of years. Those are real stories that I get. And I say engineers because our sport is full of engineers and full of really brilliant people. And I've been pleased to find out that a lot of them have had crypto at least as a hobby, let alone a side hustle for a while.
Guys, I'm really excited to be sponsored by Harmony. I know all of us have traded their coin one in the past, but what they're fundamentally doing is a game changer. Harmony is your open platform for assets, collectibles, identity, and governance. Think of it as the one to bridge all blockchains. Harmony is open and insanely fast with 2-second transaction finality and 100 times lower fees than Ethereum. Their secure bridges offer cross-chain asset transfers with Ethereum, Binance, and almost every single other chain. Maybe most exciting is that Harmony, in cooperation with Sushi, will be providing $4 million in incentives for liquidity mining. Find out more about this program and build something yourself at thewolfofallstreets.link/harmony. That's thewolfofallstreets.link/harmony. Build on harmony, run on all chains. Crypto has been a lot of people's dirty little secret for a long time, and now it's sort of okay to talk about it, right? And I think that that's across retail, but also we see it with institutions and Wall Street, right? It was like you had this tremendous reputational risk even mentioning Bitcoin before people think you're nuts, and now it's the opposite. It's like you need to know a little bit about it if you're going to have any sort of financial you know, interest or planning.
Well, I think it, you know, you look at the space over the last at least 5 years, and it's been very retail driven, and so, you know, people don't maybe are hesitant to be so public or outspoken about it. They don't want to, you know, when you have really smart people or really well known people out there in the world saying that it's a scam or it's a Ponzi scheme. It's, you know, it's a basic person like me who I'm not college educated. To them, I'm not a smart person. It might hold someone back from saying, yeah, I've invested thousands of dollars or my life savings into this space that you say is a scam. I don't want to look like a fool or something like that. So you could say it's a dirty little secret, but it's just, it's proven over and over again that it's real and that it's not a scam. That just like any other industry, there might be scams in it, but that doesn't mean that the space as a whole is a scam. And, and I look at companies like Voyager. You know, I set out a couple years ago and really did decide that I wanted to find a way to fold crypto into my professional work. And that's why I started networking in the space. I started going to crypto conferences and felt like, you know, this is something that can be part of my professional work. Pomp told me, back in 2017 that he thought that the crypto space was 2 to 3 years away from true mainstream marketing and mainstream adoption from that side of it. And he was dead on. And so when he told me that, I said, okay, because at the time I was thinking like, oh, who can I find to sponsor me or to be a part of me? Because I've been in this space now and I want to be a part of it. And Anthony said, no, I think we're still two to three years away from a real compelling marketing effort. And so I stopped like trying to find it at that moment. And I just said, okay, I'm just going to try to meet people. And so that's how I met Steve Ehrlich. And, you know, he was building Voyager very early at the time. And so we just stayed in touch. But I look at that team now and I look at this space where people say, you know, this is, you know, edge. It's like the edge of institutional finance, but this is, I see the Voyager team and I'm like, these are pros. Like these people know what they're doing. This is a real company and this, they have real services to offer. Right. And they're building out a platform. I mean, to sound like an ad, I guess, but it's like, they're building out a platform that is a real use case for the future of how I'm going to deal with my money. Right. I mean, I can put USDC in my Voyager account and earn 9% interest. That's a little bit better than what my dollars earn at Bank of America.
Yeah. I talk about this all the time. Buying Bitcoin was a hard sell for me on my like friends in real life. Right. I've been saying it for years, buy Bitcoin. You know, you get the normal pushback. Buy USDC stablecoin and earn 9 or 10% has not been a hard sell to a single person. And I think that's the new gateway drug into crypto is a savings account that's not volatile that people are familiar with that reminds them of when they were kids and you could actually earn interest.
Right. Well, and like I described before, you know, I have personal pretty conservative financial values in terms of how I handle my portfolio. And because my business can be volatile, I keep, you know, a certain amount of my monthly expenses in cash, no matter what I think the market is doing. And so the thought of that cash earning 9% interest is like insane to me. And so it's a no brainer. And, you know, for a platform like Voyager to, you know, eventually have tools where I can debit straight out of that and make purchases through USDC, and they're you know, transact it at whatever vendor merchant you're at is a great thing. So my process through, you know, you talk about like hard sell to family and friends. My wife is like a great barometer for me because at one point in our crypto lives, was like, what is this thing? You're not using like a significant amount of
our
money.
Actual money, right? This is like
you're not using the fake money. Money, right? And two, you know, being very, you know, critical or, you know, trying to understand more. I catch her in bed at night, like checking the crypto, the Bitcoin price on Google. And I'm like, why are you looking at the price of Bitcoin? I heard it was up today or down today or whatever. To, you know, in May of this year, she said, I wish you would have bought more. And I was like, oh, there's the moment. And then, also, yeah, that's it.
I've literally made the joke countless times that the minute that you show your spouse or like your best friend how well your portfolio doing is the perfect moment to sell.
Right, right. Sell it. Yep. Yeah. Well, that and when my grandma called me and asked me, told me that she was interested in buying some Bitcoin and asked me how to help her with it. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I really do think that that's a very compelling case. So I want to talk about what a sponsorship looks like for you. I mean, Voyager specifically, but I guess any, because I don't think anyone knows, like we see the names of a company on a car. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that means. Is it for one race? Is it for a season? Is it the entire crew? How's that work? And then I want to talk about the fact that you actually got paid in crypto for doing it. So
yeah, for sure. So, you know, in racing, it costs money to put a race car on the track ultimately. And a lot goes into our cars, building them, developing them. You know, these teams employ, depending on the size of the team, they're going to employ anywhere from 20 to 50 people per car that you race. Or per race team. So your race teams are funded through sponsorship. We also are partly funded through the prize money, but it takes, you know, at least the same amount of sponsorship prize money as it does sponsorship to field a successful race team. So, fortunately in our sport, NASCAR has a tremendous fan base. And we have a tremendous TV deal. We're on NBC, we're on Fox. We have great viewership. You know, sports live viewership on TV is a challenge lately anyways, but you know, our events in terms of the audience and the viewership on a weekly basis are drawing, you know, 100,000 people through these racetracks over the course of the weekend plus, and millions of people watching on television. So there's a compelling marketing effort for any company that wants to invest in the branding side of things, but there's also a great business to business and hospitality opportunity for businesses as well. So as a team or as a driver pitching sponsorship, we're kind of pitching both of those things depending on the company. You know, for a company like Voyager, there's a great branding exercise there. And they're, you know, they're a brand that wants to build trust in the mainstream. They want to build their brand in the mainstream, but they also want to build the community. And they want to build the people, the community of the Voyager investors and fans. And by traveling week to week and having a race car on the track at all these different venues in the future, you know, we can entertain people at the racetrack. We can engage with race fans at the racetrack and build the community that way as well.
It's so absolutely, absolutely cool. So does that... As the structure, you talk about this team of 20 to 50 people per race and putting that all together. You're the driver. Are you sort of the CEO of this small business, or is there somebody else who runs it and your role is to drive and test the car and do that? And there's someone else who sort of oversees all this sponsorship and the engineers and the build.
So on a team operations side, the team operations is run by Johnny Davis, and the team is called JD Motorsports. And Johnny is what we call the car owner, and he's someone that I've worked with many times over the course of my career. He's an old school guy. He's a South Carolina boy. Him and I actually, do a lot of our business on a handshake sometimes. And, we've had a lot of trust in each other over the years. And he's the one that puts the car on the racetrack. For my business, I'm a hired driver, and that's where I've made my living my entire career. And I've served a lot of race teams from a development side of things. So I've found a niche as a driver because I started out as a test driver for Hendrick Motorsports. I found my niche as a driver by going to smaller teams that need quick improvement. They need development, and I'm able to use my feedback to help get a team on the right path. So with that, it attracts sponsorship. And when we have sponsorship, sometimes that sponsorship is brought through my business. And in the case of Voyager, I manage obviously my driving services with JD Motorsports, but I also manage the Voyager sponsorship. Sometimes the teams manage the sponsorship depending on where the relationship originated. And in those cases, the team has the sponsor and they have the team and they go hire the driver and say, okay, we need this driver to be the spokesperson for the sponsor, but we also need him to be our driver.
So it's somewhat complex and there's a lot of nuance to how each and every deal can be. It's really interesting to hear about it because it's so different, I think, from other sports.
It is different. And I've, in the industry, we've people have said that NASCAR is the Wild West of professional sports. It can be that way because we don't have a players union. There's no drivers union. We don't have salary caps or minimum salaries, and there's no guaranteed money. There's no retirement funds. We pay our own insurance and you run your own business as an independent contractor. So, you could simplify it by saying it costs money to race a car and somebody has to pay for that, right? So between the prize money and the sponsorship, those are your two biggest levers in terms of finding a way to put a car on the track. And at that point, it's a question of who's driving that, right? Is the team the one that's funding that, or is the driver the one that's able to come up with the sponsorship and fund that? Or does the sponsor want to start a team themselves? That's happened in the sport as well.
Right.
There's really no rules. I mean, you can, it's just a matter of how do you get a car to the track? And so, for me as a driver, it's great for my business to be able to be aligned with a company like Voyager, who obviously is aligned with me personally because I'm in the crypto space, right? I'm representing a product and I'm representing a brand that I can align with. So the two of us together can find the best solution on the racetrack to deliver the exposure that they're looking for and the hospitality for their guests that they're looking for.
And you chose to be paid in Litecoin, correct?
Yes. A portion of the sponsorship was led with Litecoin, you could say. There was some Bitcoin in there as well, and Voyager token as well.
So are you passionate about Litecoin? Was that something you asked for? Was that something they offered? Why those three? I mean, obviously the VGX and Bitcoin, I think are pretty straightforward, but that third one could have basically been anything.
Yeah. So Litecoin is one that I very early on was mining, connected with Charlie Lee from Litecoin several years ago and built a relationship with him. And I've spoken at the Litecoin Summit as well. And, I think it's a great token. I think it takes some heat on social media, but I think it's fast. And it has very low fees. It's easy to move money on it. It has a tremendous amount of wallets and users. If you look at the on-chain data on Litecoin, there's a lot of activity there. And so, I think that it's a coin that can tend to be overlooked, and it was something that I asked for with Voyager, and as a result, Charlie Lee is also part of the program through Hedge, which is gethedge.io, a startup that he's a part of that is bringing crypto to your paycheck. If people want to accept their salary in crypto, they can use Hedge as a tool to do that, to convert their paycheck to crypto.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I'm curious, we hear a lot of stories, and it's clearly it's different for you guys, like you said, without the player association and without sort of, really, it's like a safety net, right?
Right.
But countless stories about athletes making a ton of money, but ending up broke, right? Whether it's they're young and it's poor mismanagement, or it seems more often a wealth manager that takes advantage of them or something like that. How do you see that in your sport? How do you mitigate that? And I guess, where does crypto fall into helping to avoid that?
I think that, you know, we definitely see it in our sport. And I think that there's a lot of race car drivers, and I mean, I've heard from old race car drivers, I've gotten advice from old race car drivers. I'll never forget one that told me when I was 20 years old and I was a teammate on the team that we were driving for, with this guy, and he said, look, man, he's like 10 years ago, this is how much money I was making. I had 10 employees. I had a jet. I had a bus. I had a property. And he's like, for what? What did I have 10 employees for? What were they doing? And he's like, I didn't have a business. I was driving race cars, right? That was my business. So, you know, that was some interesting advice. You know, I don't think your race cars have race car drivers can be flashy and have been flashy. So, you know, that's when we think of people wasting their money, we think of them buying fancy things and things like that. But sometimes in our business, you can get caught up in just the pure expense of it all, right? We travel 40 weeks a year. So, you know, you're buying a plane, you're buying a motorhome, you're employed, you've got PR people, you've got a manager, you've got an agent, you just end up with this huge overhead because, you know, the drivers over the years have made $5, $10, $15 million a year. It's easy to spend that pretty fast. I think that for me, crypto and investing in crypto has been, maybe it's been an exercise of financial independence and in just like individual liberty, right? You know, the you can start it out with the basic concept of having the keys to your Bitcoin. Is probably the foundation of it all. And then as these financial services start coming up in platforms like Voyager that are offering rates that you're not getting from your bank, it's make you start realize maybe what your money in the bank is doing. So for me, it's just been a personal experience of, like I said earlier, I've learned by doing.
I would have to imagine actually that rationally, the message of Bitcoin and, like you said, freedom and liberty should resonate well in NASCAR. Because I would say that you have a very, you know, representative of the population of America fan base, right?
Yep.
Who probably are very passionate about liberty and freedom and American ideals. So I would think that actually NASCAR could be a place where the fans would really, really be passionate about adoption if they understood it.
For sure. I think that's part of why Voyager wants to be involved. I think that's a huge, I think that we have, well, I will say overall, we have great demographics as a sport, and we have fans from all walks and we have all different types of fans. But I will say that even before my Voyager sponsorship, I have seen a lot of race fans that have engaged with my crypto content on social media that have told me that they were in the space or have asked questions about it. We've seen gold sponsorships over the years. We've seen, those types of things. So, you know, you're definitely on the right track with that thinking. And I think that's there's a legitimate crossover there.
So we got your Bitcoin and crypto journey, but I'm actually curious because I've never had the opportunity to ask. I always wonder how someone becomes a race car driver, because every other sport, it's obvious, right? And we've read outliers. You're the biggest kid and you get the best coaching and you go to baseball camp and you play in the minor leagues. And it's a very, very defined path for most sports. Like, I was not driving cars fast when I was five. So I was playing other sports. So how does that work?
Yeah, racing is an interesting business because there's so many different disciplines of grassroots racing where you can work your way up, but there's also multiple disciplines of professional racing, right? And for me, I started out in go-karts. I raced go-karts on all different types of track surfaces. I raced on asphalt, I raced on dirt, I raced road courses, I raced oval tracks, I traveled the country and raced. And from there, I started racing full-size cars. And I traveled, that kind of honed in the track surfaces into a certain type of car. And so from the early to mid 2000s, I was racing a full bodied stock car. To someone that doesn't know any better, it might look just like a NASCAR race car. I was traveling around the country racing that on short track asphalt ovals. And the reason that
you were a kid.
Yeah, I was 14. I was 13, 14 years old racing these full size cars. Driver's license until I was 16. Yeah. I raced them until I was 16, 17. And the reason that my career path went that direction was because at the time, that's where the industry, that's where all the money in the industry was being invested. So the top teams, the top manufacturers were pulling their drivers out of those types of cars. And for, you know, that could be a reason that the people that were having success at the highest level were coming from those backgrounds, right? So they said, okay, because of these drivers having success, we're going to find the next crop of drivers to come from that background. And so as a result as well, that form of racing, the short track asphalt racing that I was doing, was highly competitive. I was not just racing against other 16 and 17 year old drivers that wanted to get NASCAR opportunities like I did, but I was racing against actual professional drivers that race those cars for a living. They didn't even race NASCAR for a living. They raced those cars for a living. So that's just what creates this tons of competition. And at that level, I won a lot of races, had a lot of success. And by the time I was 15, 16 years old, I had an agent and I was being scouted by Toyota and Chevrolet and Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing and big teams that were looking at me as a driver saying this could be our next driver. So, from there, when I was 17, I signed a contract with Hendrick Motorsports, to be a test driver, to be Jimmy Johnson's test driver. And so my first job, Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon were the two lead drivers at Hendrick Motorsports at the time. And my first job when I was 17 years old at Hendrick Motorsports was to test drive Jeff Gordon's Daytona 500 car for that year. This is a childhood hero of mine.
Cooler than anything I was doing at 17.
It was a childhood hero of mine. I was basically fresh out of high school. I graduated high school early. I completed all my credits and was able to get out of Iowa and get to North Carolina before the end of the school year. And yeah, I mean, I had a brand new fresh Hendrick Motorsports polo on and climbed into Jeff Gordon's Daytona 500 car. And fired it up for the first time. It was an incredible time. But for the next 5 years, I was Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon's test driver, won championship rings driving for them. And that's what laid the groundwork for what I said earlier, where I became this kind of driver that smaller teams that were maybe lacking performance or lacking funding said, hey, this guy has been driving really good equipment. Even though he hasn't been racing those cars, he's been driving them. He knows what a good car is supposed to feel like. We need to hire him to help our organization. And so, you know, I've had this long career in NASCAR. I'm approaching 500 starts this year, which is a really big milestone because there aren't a lot of drivers, active drivers right now that have 500 starts. And I have served a lot of race teams from a development side of things. And really the one last thing for me to check off of my list as a career NASCAR driver is to win races and win championships. And to get to that level, I've got to, and now I need to drive for those teams as their primary driver, not just be the test driver.
Such a crazy story. You must have been an absolute local legend in high school, my God.
You know, I do come from a small, you know, I come from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I wouldn't say it's a small town. You know, in Iowa, in terms of Iowa, it's one of the bigger bigger cities in Iowa. But I grew up in the family business where we, you know, have a fairly recognizable name in town. Castle Motors is my family's car business. And you know, the family business has served the community for over 50 years. And so I was raised with this small town mentality of like, my dad would always get on me about driving across town and always having castle plates on the car. Like, don't drive like a jerk or cut people off, because he always would say that he would hear about it. People walk in the dealership and say, "Oh, Castle Motors car cut me off at the red light," whatever. So
yeah, like, I'm literally a race car driver, dude. Yeah.
But I was raised, you know, with this mentality that there's always somebody watching, and you know, and so I think that helped me going into the professional world. It helped me on the internet. So those are good things. But racing is an interesting sport. There's no defined path. I mean, like you said, I was fortunate because I took this route with short track asphalt racing, but it wasn't long after I became a NASCAR driver, 5 or 6 years later, that path for young drivers kind of dried up, and it changed to grassroots dirt track racing. So now you have drivers in NASCAR right now, like Chase Briscoe and Kyle Larson and Christopher Bell. These guys came from dirt track racing sprint cars in Indiana and California and like little pockets of the country where dirt track racing is really popular. And that's the discipline that is a really popular discipline right now. That's where the most competition is at. And those drivers learn car control in a different way than I do. And at the end of the day, we all race against each other. So they have these different nuances about their driving styles that I don't have, but I have nuances about my driving style coming from asphalt racing and the way that we learn to conserve our equipment and the way that we learn to manage the car over the course of a race. I learned in a way that they didn't learn. So it's such a interesting dynamic, and that's just NASCAR, right? That doesn't even address IndyCar or Formula One or the different ways you get to those other disciplines.
Yeah. I think anyone who rises to the top of a sport, profession, anything, there's always timing and luck involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what you know, you mentioned outliers, and I'm a big believer, you know, in that sometimes the universe is just gonna, put you where it puts you. But I do believe in hard work. I believe in 10,000 hours, especially because I've always, you know, felt humbly that maybe I don't know if I have the most raw talent. I feel like I learn things through repetition. And I think that's why stock car driving fits me well, because our races are endurance races. They're races of survival, and driving a NASCAR race car at 200 miles an hour on a mile and a half racetrack, the cars have a lot of grip and they go really fast. You use a lot of throttle, you know, you're wide open for a long time. But to make a car, to get that last 1% out of the car, you have to really pay attention to the nuances of the pavement and the tire and the aerodynamics. And so learning through repetition, lap after lap after lap after lap, is what I feel like I've picked up on as a driver. And that's what drives me lap after lap in a race to make my car better. Some of that I learned through testing. When I was testing at Hendrick Motorsports, we would go to the racetrack and do simulated races. And I was by myself. So I would go to a test track and we did a full 500 mile simulated race where I just literally ran 500 miles for 3 hours straight in the car without getting out. Because they were testing components, or they were testing longevity of certain pieces, or the car performance or brake heat or whatever it may be. But for me as a driver, that was an opportunity to drive a car at 200 miles an hour for 3 hours nonstop. And those are the types of things that just compound on your experience and have helped me make it as a professional.
What happens when you have to go to the bathroom?
That's always
just
a fun
go,
question.
Man.
Yeah, you know what? One
Dumb
time
and Dumber,
I was at,
just go, man.
I was at a race one time, and I was in a suite. I was doing an appearance with my sponsor before the race, and the sponsor asked me. He goes, "Landon, what? I got a question for you. What do you do if you have to go to the bathroom?" And I was like, "Well, I said, I'm going to turn the question back around to you. I said, you spent a lot of money to get your name on my car and to get me out on the racetrack. Like, what do you want me to do? And I was like, do you want me to stop and pull in? He's like, no, I want you to stay out there. I'm like, all right, there's the answer. The real answer is if you go to the bathroom before you go out on the racetrack, generally you can hold it for at least 3 or 4 hours.
And I'd imagine that you're like so hot and sweaty that you're probably like losing sweat so fast that
it'll be just a couple weeks ago we had a thermometer in the car at Texas and it was 147 degrees in the cockpit of the car, so usually
you're fully in
wearing a helmet, fire suit, gloves, everything strapped into the seat. I will lose anywhere from 7 to 12 pounds of water weight in a race. You know, you're trying to replace that as much as you can, right? It's not it's a function of the body to sweat, but you don't want to just lose 12 pounds, right? So for me, endurance sports has helped me understand my body and helped me understand the limits of my body. So my dad and I trained together. We compete in Ironman triathlon together. That really helped me understand the limits of my body. And so my nutrition, I have a nutrition plan inside the car during a race. And that involves taking in anywhere from 20 to 30 ounces of fluids per hour and about 300 calories per hour in the car. And that's just to keep up with that weight loss.
How are you doing that? How are you doing that in your suit? Do you have tubes fed or like, how does that work? Pop your helmet off and chug a Gatorade and eat a protein bar.
I do it all through fluids and I keep a 24 ounce bottle in the car. And the reason I do it through bottles and not like a Camelback or anything like that is because I like to keep track mentally of how much I am drinking in the car, where if it's a Camelback with 150 ounces in it or something like that, it's hard for me to keep track of how much I've drank. So I actually literally have like a bicycle cage, right, that you would have on your bicycle to hold a water bottle attached to my seat. And that's that bottle has a hose on the end of it. And when it's empty, I ask the team for more and they'll refill it. And then that mixture, I drink a custom blended mixture from a company called Infinite. And it's a blend that we've honed in over the years. I use it in my Ironman triathlons. I've used it in the race car. It's got carbs in it. It's got sugar. It's got protein. A little bit of protein helps curb hunger, so you don't get any hunger pains. It's got caffeine in it, and it's a little over 300 calories so in each bottle. So I'll drink one of those.
Think about.
Yeah, I drink one of those per hour in the car, and that usually keeps me right.
So much to consider. Now I know that we have only a few minutes because you're going to catch a flight to Vegas, but what you're going to Vegas for is awesome. So I want to talk about that really quick because I saw Charlie Schrem tweet about it, which is what made me even ask you if that's why you were headed there.
Yeah.
The symposium for new NFL athletes. I saw hundreds of new NFL athletes. You guys are going to be up there talking about crypto.
Yeah. It's awesome. Voyager is sponsoring this symposium out in Vegas for new NFL players. And I think there's an esports element to it as well. So they asked me to come out and speak. And so Steve and I are going to, Steve Ehrlich, the CEO of Voyager, are going to make a presentation. I think Steve's going to do some of the heavy lifting. I probably will be on stage with him and they
color
asked
guy.
What's that?
You know, the color guy, color commentary,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'll be there and speak from an athlete's perspective, kind of like the stuff that we talked about and just my experience in crypto, maybe some of my aha moments and sort of the why. And you know, I know what these players are going through. I've been there in my life, my career, you know, this first couple of years of being a professional, it's something I've dedicated my life to, and now all of a sudden you're making money at it. And how do you balance the professional side versus the sport and still, you know, build a business around that? So it'll be interesting to speak to these players and offer some perspective, not just on stage, but after the fact, you know, look forward to making some connections as well. And just be there maybe as a resource or just as a friend. And I think it's a cool symposium that they've put together, and I'm glad that Voyager is a part of it.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. It sounds like it's primarily about that financial aspect that we talked to, how to not go broke. Right. You know, luckily, I guess you right. guys have longer, you guys tend to have, it seems like you can have a much longer career, at least in some manner in the sport. Football, I mean, you might make all your money and never make it again after 3 or 4 years, one bum ankle or you know, ACL tear, and it can be over. So exactly. It's really important for these guys to manage that first money that they get well, I would imagine. So yeah, exactly. I know you got to go catch your flight. So where can everybody follow you and what you're doing after this conversation?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter a lot, at Landon Castle on Twitter. And I talk just about everything from racing. You can get some insights on NASCAR from there and crypto, and you'll see some Shiba Inu retweets in there as the Shiba community is involved. And also on Instagram as well. At Landon Castle on pretty much all the social media platforms.
Did I see that you have another crypto sponsorship now or another company that you're working with?
Yes. Yeah. So Trade the Chain, is a new sponsor, which is really cool. You know, I've never really looked, there's a lot of investing communities and things like that, especially on crypto Twitter. And some of them, you know, I think you need to put some thought into what is the service that this community is really offering me, especially if I'm paying for it. But one that I think, you know, I've been impressed with, and this, which is why I've connected with them, is Trade the Chain, because they offer some pretty cool tools that, that I think are very simple and easy to understand. And that is, you know, public sentiment. I mean, you know, we all kind of have seen how public sentiment drives a lot of these crypto markets. And if you are a trader, whether the day trader or you're, you know, trading monthly or quarterly or there for the long term, I think, you know, it's worth a look to see what Trade the Chain, how their sentiment tools can help you and make informed decisions. So yeah, it's not like some pump and dump group or anything like that.
I look forward to seeing you with like 17 crypto companies everywhere. You know, get your Ricky Bobby. Is Talladega Nights your favorite movie, or is it your favorite movie?
Yeah. No, Days of Thunder.
It's got to be Days of Thunder, right? Yeah, you
know,
of course.
No, I definitely, you know, I look forward to having more crypto related partnerships. You know, Voyager is obviously leading the way, and they're the primary focus for this whole program, and they're the ones that are making it all happen. And I've gotten reached out to by a lot of folks and had to turn some away and say, look, sure. You know, I want to be able to channel my energy on these partners and make sure that everything is as compelling and authentic as I want it to be. Because, sure. You know, if I can't speak for something the right way, then I don't know if I want to represent it. I don't want to just be, get paid for a couple tweets or anything.
Right.
Like
of course. Yeah, no, yeah, I totally get that. Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, man. Shake and bake.
There you go.
Have a good trip, and thank you so much. I think this is really valuable, and it gave me so much insight and so many questions I wanted to ask, even just about the sport beyond the crypto side of it. So just really, really cool. Thank you, man. And we'll have to do this again down the road.
Thanks, Scott.
Have a good one.